First, I relationships to disclose. Get out of here. There's a book that's put out by some right wing think. I know it's oxymoron think tank called 100 Academics Who Are Ruining America, and it's my dream to be included in the next version. So I'm certainly not funded by any corporations. In fact, there's probably some who are fits and fiddling with the microphone here. The groups that I've been working with on the Cole Project include Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Greenpeace, the Sierra Club, and I want to give a shout out to all of the fantastic volunteers and staff members there, as well as the thousands of individuals from throughout Portland, Washington, and British Columbia who showed up at environmental quality department hearings and protests. We had a DEQ hearing a few months back that was the largest in the history of Oregon. Almost 1,000 people showed up to protest coal trains coming to the Pacific Northwest. The other shout out is to my mom, who is here with me in town. Without her many years of self-sacrifice and love, I would not be in the position I'm in today and doing the kind of work that I'm doing. So thank you, Mom. These slides will be updated on the website. If you want the book, there's a flyer about it back there. You can get a 20% discount. I was going to update the slides the night before leaving, so you might find a few errors, but I'm going to be, as probably a lot of you know, a single dad to a newborn in 3 weeks, and I went into Babies R Us the night before I was coming here and had a panic attack at the rampant consumerism that begins before birth. So without any further ado, let me just give you some background before I get into my slides. There are 2,300 coal plants worldwide. 620 of these are in China. Coal accounts for 40% of electricity production worldwide and about 40% of worldwide CO2 emissions. And in the United States, 70% of rail traffic currently consists of coal. So what we are fighting with this coalition is the transport of Powder River Basin coal. That's from Wyoming and Montana to China and India. And the Powder River Basin consists largely of federal land, meaning we own it, and it has about 43% of America's coal supply. And this coal is sold for incredibly cheaply to the coal companies, often for as low as $1 a ton during non-competitive bidding processes. And when the coal is then sold by the coal companies to utilities in the United States, they charge about $9 per ton. We're selling this coal to China for anywhere between $80 and $123 per ton, and the price of coal has been dropping dramatically over the last few months, so it's more down in the $80 per ton range. But it's been estimated that since 1982, such uncompetitive leasing and poor oversight have cost U.S. taxpayers about $29 billion. And if you're interested in delving more into the economics of coal production and transport and burning, I recommend that you look at an article from the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences from 2011, which is available open access on the internet, that gives an economic accounting of the life cycle of coal. And what they found was that even in those communities where there's the so-called war against coal, the Kentuckys, the West Virginias, and so on, that having coal in those states, the externalized public health and other costs, as we're describing in the initial talk, far exceed the economic benefits to the state, not only in terms of income, but in terms of jobs. So it's the typical story of corporations internalizing profits and externalizing costs onto the public. So the plans for these companies are to send coal through the Pacific Northwest. We're talking about 100 million tons of coal per year going through on some on barges, but most of it on trains, 26 per day. There's 4 diesel engines per train, and each train consists of 100 to 120 cars. This would double the U.S.'s coal export capacity. So if you go back to 2006, we were exporting 50 million tons. This year, that should say 2013, it's 100 million tons. And with the proposals, this will jump to 200 million tons per year. And this coal is going to be traveling through a national scenic area, the very beautiful Columbia River Gorge. Already, fortunately, 3 of the proposals have been dropped. I won't detail, go into detail here for those of you who are not from the area, but needless to say, we have had some success in having the coal companies drop proposals. So I'm going to take you through some of the health and the environmental consequences of the coal cycle and then talk about how that specifically relates to the Pacific Northwest. And we'll do these rather quickly. Andy's going to cover it in some more detail. But the health consequences of coal mining include respiratory diseases, heart disease, multiple cancers, low birth weight, birth defects, et cetera. And there's a lot of deception surrounding the science in this area and a lot of so-called proprietary data that's not released by the coal companies to scientific investigators who are trying to look into the health consequences. This is the Powder River Basin. It's basically open pit mining with gargantuan equipment. The coal is loaded onto trains that basically never stop. Most of it's automated. There are very few jobs in this area. And sending the coal through the Northwest by trains is dangerous in terms of accidents. There were 40 train derailments over the last 2 years. There have also been some barge accidents, and there's also a risk of fires breaking out in coal terminals. And these fires are particularly dangerous because of the nature of the way coal is stored and the surfactant that's often put on it, and that you can't add water to put out the fire. So it requires specialized firefighting equipment and specialized chemicals. And this could, of course, create a major industrial disaster in the heart of a big city if it happens on the Columbia or at its junction with the Willamette River in Portland. This is a derailment near Baltimore from last year. Here's one from Washington. These are basically the same trains in Wisconsin that would be carrying the coal through the Northwest. Here's a coal-laden ship breaking up off the coast of South Africa earlier this year. This was a barge that actually ran into a coal terminal and broke what was carrying the coal out. And this is a fire that occurred in British Columbia this year. These trains are going to cause excess wear and tear on the tracks, and particularly through leakage of the coal dust, which then gets into the tracks themselves and causes accelerated breakdown. And the railroads are limited by federal law from paying more than 5% of the cost for improvements, therefore the cost, of course, will be borne by us, the taxpayers. And this is also going to affect other industries that are sending their economic output by train, in that these accidents could delay them getting their products to market. And with the diesel engines that are powering these trains, diesel particulate matter is released, and this can impair lung development, cause pulmonary inflammation, and increases the risk of heart attack, stroke, cancer, and asthma. Diesel particulate matter also increases cardiopulmonary and all-cause mortality and is a developmental neurotoxin, and perinatal exposure increases the risk for autism spectrum disorder and ADHD-related symptoms. It's estimated by the railroads themselves that about 3% or 645 pounds of coal dust will be lost per car during transit. The surfactant will decrease the amount that's lost, but not significantly. And the coal dust is associated with higher rates of chronic bronchitis, emphysema, pulmonary fibrosis, exposure to heavy metals, things like cadmium, arsenic, lead, mercury, and a recent epidemiological study found a threefold increased risk of cancer in coal terminal workers in Australia who are particularly heavily exposed to the dust. The dust is also going to affect organic gardeners, and there are many of these in Portland as the dust blows off the tracks. And these trains tend to go through poorer communities and communities of color, and also through First Nation land and through American Indian reservations. Andy's going to get more into that. There's also the health consequences of the noise from these trains. Noise is associated with cardiovascular disease, stroke, cognitive impairment in children. You can imagine if you're in a school and there's 100 trains going by per day, how that could interrupt your learning process. Noise can exacerbate mental health disorders and cause sleep disturbances, and the sleep disturbances then secondarily increase your risk of heart attack, cancer, stroke, a whole lot of things. The number of trains going through basically means that in big cities like Portland and Seattle, you're talking about 2 hours worth of delays over a 24-hour period at major intersections. And so each train could take anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes to pass. This is going to delay emergency medical vehicles from bringing heart attack and stroke patients to the emergency room, where time is myocardium and time is brain. And, of course, you're going to see increased accidents, traumatic injuries, and even deaths. What happens when the coal then gets to the Far East and is burned? It's going to increase ground level ozone and release mercury and other heavy metals. And mercury, of course, is a neurotoxin. If you're interested, on my website, on the environmental health page, there's a open access PowerPoint, as they all are, that talks about the life cycle of mercury, the history of what's been known about mercury poisoning, and intersperses that with a number of very poignant pictures by W. Eugene Smith, who's a photojournalist who, with his wife Eileen, documented the effects of exposure to mercury in Minamata Bay, Japan, and led to one of the seminal environmental health law cases when the company was prohibited from doing this. In the United States already, there are anywhere between 300 and 600,000 women of reproductive age who have toxic levels of mercury in their blood. And that's certainly going to worsen, because a study showed that on Mount Bachelor, which is in the middle of Oregon, that 18% of the mercury that's found in the water there comes from coal that's burned in the Far East. So it's going to come back to haunt us. And then there are the consequences of burning coal itself, which include air pollution, which leads to 75,000 premature deaths in the United States. I think the number has been increased somewhat due to a recent study, but I don't have that exact number. And 6 million deaths worldwide from air pollution. And then, of course, the deaths from global warming. 400,000 deaths occur each year, according to the WHO, and 5 to 5.5 million disability-adjusted life years are lost annually. So the true cost of coal, if you were to look at the bigger picture, and first let's talk about fossil fuel subsidies. So this is the true cost of fossil fuels. It's estimated that the government spent about $502 billion to subsidize dirty energy industries in 2012. These subsidies are 12 times the subsidies that are provided for renewables. And that excludes the military costs to, say, keep oil flowing from the Persian Gulf. And when subsidies and externalities are taken into account, renewables, of course, look great. And in fact, when you just break it down to coal itself, it's estimated that the electric bill that you pay to get your coal-fired power plant electricity to your home is only one-third of the true public health cost of that coal. So you're really paying threefold what your energy bill is if you're getting your energy from coal in other externalized taxpayer-associated costs. Now, when I go to testify, as Andy does at these meetings, the front group that we're combating, which is called Alliance for Northwest Jobs and Exports, they'll bring in some workers in hard hats, and they'll give them a free lunch and have them sit kind of surly in the back. And fortunately, I have a little bit of credibility with them, since I've spoken at SIEU rallies about living wage and so on. But they're all about the jobs. So it's difficult to be in a position as a progressive in speaking to these groups. And most of us traditionally support unions, green energy, living wage. We have to realize that the few jobs that are going to be offered are very short-term jobs. This is all going to happen over the course of 5 to 10 years, and then the bottom is going to completely drop out of the coal market, because the major financial institutions are saying stay away from coal. It's basically a dying technology. And many will not come with health insurance, and the health consequences, of course, to the workers are myriad and various and awful. There's also going to be effects of transporting the coal to the Northwest on local retailers. There was a study in Seattle showing that rail crossing congestion could cost up to almost $500,000 in lost revenue, plus an additional $475 million in diminished real estate values for those just living in the immediate area surrounding the railroads. And, of course, a negative effect on tourism. So what's going to happen is you're going to actually lose some jobs on the Seattle waterfront, because people won't be able to get to those businesses to buy the tourist items and other things that they need. And I'll come back to the amorality point in just a moment. This shows the amount of jobs that you could get for a $1 million investment. And sustainable forestry is at the top. Gas is high up, livestock. You come down to school buildings is about in the middle. Coal is way at the bottom. So you get very few jobs for the money that you invest in this dirty industry. And most of these jobs are non-union, 90% of them. So in reality, this is a jobs program for pulmonologists, special ed teachers, and morticians. And as I said, recent developments show coal's future is bleak, export prices are down significantly, investors are running, and Chinese demand is expected to drop with the development of nuclear and renewables. The government came out just 2 weeks ago and said the air pollution situation in China is grim. And in fact, the government has now banned new coal power plant production through new coal plant production near some of its major cities. And in desperation, the supporters of the project to bring coal through the Northwest will use this amoral logic of, well, someone else will sell it to them, so why don't we profit from it? Why not American coal companies? Because it's just going to come from Australia or Russia or somewhere else in the world. But this is similar to the amoral logic that has been used for decades to support tobacco sales in the developing world. Now, the latest, sadly, is that if it doesn't work out with coal, they're hoping to send pipelines on wheels through the Northwest to send fracked oil, which, of course, raises a whole similar Pandora's box of trouble. And there's also plans to send coal down through the Gulf if they fail up with us. So it's just one part of the balloon, and if we squeeze it, it's going to go somewhere else. So we're really relying on people in other parts of the country to become active in their communities and to nip this in the bud. So what's being done? Protests. A lawsuit was recently filed against the, I think it was the Department of State Lands, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, about water quality and how coal dust will affect the water quality in Portland that was filed by Columbia River Keepers and others. Many areas in Oregon and Washington have passed local measures that are, of course, non-binding, but that say we don't want coal coming through the area. The Oregon and Washington governors and the mayors of Seattle and Portland have expressed in strong language their concerns and their opposition to having coal come through our communities. And so it's important that we all, how long? A minute?
No more minutes.
Okay. No more minutes. What you can do. Educate yourself. I'll just conclude. Coal is a dying 19th century technology. It's got Dickensian effects on human health and the environment, and the consequences of transport and burning are awful. We need an energy policy for the 21st century, one that uses clean technologies that provide long-term, well-paying, safe jobs. Remember, you can make a difference. Nobel Prize-winning author Gunter Grass, first job of a citizen is to keep your mouth open. And if you think you're too small to have an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito in your tent. Thanks. Slideshow will be on the website. Here's the website.